It's The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The group Black, Young, and Educated was created by five teenagers in 2019 in response to a lack of education and other opportunities for young Black people in Pittsburgh. Now they're organizing many of the largest protests against racism and police brutality in Pittsburgh. Nick Anglin is a founding member of Black, Young, and Educated and the group's CEO. Nick, traditionally, organizers are older. They've been around. But you've gotten these crowds together as young people. Does that amaze you? Surprise you?
Yeah, that definitely surprises me because usually young people, we aren't taken seriously by others. So by adults. So it's just like, it surprises me that our voices are being heard and, you know, people come up to us and tell us that we are inspiring and stuff like that. And people want to hear what we have to say. So it definitely surprises me. I think there's a shift in, instead of adults being the teachers, like students and kids at this point, you know, we have a lot to teach adults.
Mm. Like what? Give us an example.
Well, my generation, we are more accepting. We're more progressive. We want a brighter future for ourselves, and we are getting involved at younger ages. We are protesting for, you know, gun control, for environmental change. You know, we're protesting for Black Lives Matter. We definitely want our voices to be heard more now than ever. And yeah, I feel like we, to look into a brighter future, we have to listen to the kids and the teenagers.
Some organizers let police know where and when a demonstration is going to take place to maybe avoid confrontations. What do you think of that?
Yeah, we definitely do never let the police know where it's going to happen. I feel as though, you know, we come out there with the intention to be peaceful, where as every protest has been peaceful. We want to cause as much disturbance as possible. I feel like cooperating with the police and, you know, making them know where and when we're going to be, where and when. It's definitely, I think it takes away from protesting. It definitely does take away from the message because we're cooperating with the people that we're trying to get reformed, with the department we're trying to get reformed. So I definitely feel us not cooperating with them is not that big of a deal because, you know, we do post where we're going to be on social media days prior and in advance. So, and what I've heard is that they have people that definitely look out for protests on social media and stuff like that so they can know where and when it's going to be. So, yeah, I feel like if we make it known, and it is in our job and it is our duty to let you guys know where it's going to be because we already put that out to the general public days in advance.
Right. Black, Young, and Educated has specifically called for changes to Pennsylvania state law, which gives police officers some leeway in determining when the use of deadly force is justified. What changes are you seeking?
So right now, as Section 508 stands, it is subjective. So we're trying to get it changed to be an objective. We don't want to say that if a police officer believes that someone is a threat, they can use lethal force. We wanted to say that a police officer has to have reasonable doubt in order to use lethal force.
Reasonable doubt about what, sir?
That someone is a threat. So, and we have to make it objective. We want it to be an objective term instead of subjective because anyone can believe anything. But to have reasonable doubt, you have to have facts behind it in order to believe to use that lethal force.
As you know, this issue about police misconduct toward African Americans has been going on for years and years and years. Did you see this playing out as you grew up, and did that sort of spark an interest on your behalf?
Yes, as every Black child that I have known has spoken. Like, we definitely have seen this play out since we were kids. Since I remember my mom, the Trayvon Martin situation, she had a conversation with me about how, you know, I have to make sure I don't have my hood up or I don't look suspicious. She never wanted me to leave the house by myself or something like that, because anything could happen to me, play outside, because anything could have happened to me. She also would always tell me, you know, certain things in school. There is a disparity in, like, punishments between a white child and a black child. And I would get in trouble for minor infractions when I was in elementary school. And she would always tell me, like, look, you have to remember, you can't do the same things that white kids can do. Like, so these things definitely have affected the way we are raised, the way we are taught as black kids. So I have seen this play out. I've seen this play out time and time again. I've seen this with Trayvon Martin, with Tamir Rice. I've seen this with Sandra Bland. I've seen this with Antoine Rose Jr., you know, and I've seen this with George Floyd, and I've seen enough. So I definitely need some change this time around.
Do you believe that you are being heard by the people who can make those changes that you want?
Yes, I do believe that we are being heard by the people who can make these changes. We are at now, I'm working with Summer Lee's team to set up a meeting with her to talk about the House bill that she put up for the amendment of Section 508. So we definitely are being heard and we're being seen.
So has organizing, protesting changed maybe what you want to do in the future, your personal goals? Will it be part of your life moving forward?
Protesting and organizing will definitely be part of my life moving forward. I've always advocated for social justice causes. I identify myself as a feminist. I was marching during the Women's March, you know, so anything that is not any social injustice that happens, I will be speaking up and I will be using my platform in order to induce that change. Black and Educated, it will definitely be an organization that you will hear a lot from in the future. We have plans moving forward, so we are not going anywhere.
Nick Anglin is one of the founders and is the CEO of Black, Young, and Educated. Thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Allegheny County Council's Health and Human Services Committee will hold another hearing Wednesday on a proposal to ban certain crowd control and dispersal weapons. Post-Gazette reporter Ashley Murray has been covering this story. Ashley, this is a proposed ordinance by council members Bethany Hallam and Olivia Bennett. What specific weapons would be prohibited?
The bill aims to prohibit, under the county's health and sanitation code, the use of chemical devices such as tear gas or pepper spray, explosive devices defined as flashbang grenades, stun grenades, and kinetic devices, which could include rubber bullets, plastic bullets, beanbag rounds, so-called sponge rounds, those kinds of weapons.
County police often are involved in investigations, also in SWAT situations. Are they often taking part in crowd control?
So in the last committee meeting, which was held on June 30th, there were a few guests invited to speak. One of them was Superintendent Coleman McDonough. He answered this question by saying that in the last 4 years since he has been superintendent, county police have not been used in crowd control or have not been using these type of less lethal devices in crowd control, and that he asked other members of the force if they could remember a time that these type of weapons were deployed in a crowd control situation, and they could not. So his argument was county police aren't really using these in crowd control in the last 4 years, which is when there's been an uptick of protest activity.
Right. So final question, Ashley. this committee, Health and Human Services Committee, meets again Wednesday. Can we expect any changes, any amendments to the proposal?
Yes. So on Wednesday, there are several amendments expected to be introduced from Councilman Tom Dewar. He's a Democrat out of Bethel Park. His amendments are going to basically take this bill, you know, if approved, take this bill from a blanket ban on these type of less lethal weapons countywide to only applying to county police. So one of Coleman McDonough's concerns was that the bill written as it is would ban this across the board in Allegheny County. So perhaps a SWAT team that was responding to a so-called man with a knife call would not have the so-called less lethal weapons at their deployment. So they wouldn't be able to, you know, deploy a flashbang into a house to defuse a violent situation. That was his argument against the bill. So it looks like Councilman Dewar's amendment is aiming to address that concern.
Pittsburgh Post-Gazette reporter Ashley Murray, thanks so much for your time and thanks for your good work.
Thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Architect, urban designer, historic preservationist, and professor David Lewis died last week at age 98. Joining me for a remembrance of David Lewis's impact on our community is the president and co-founder of Pittsburgh History and Landmarks Foundation, Arthur Ziegler. Arthur, David Lewis was a native of South Africa. Why was Pittsburgh so important to him?
He left South Africa, as you know, and he was trained at Leeds. And then he received, as I understand it and remember, it's a long time ago, an offer from Carnegie Tech then to become the first Andrew Mellon Professor of Urban Design, I think it was called. And so he accepted it and came here and landed in Pittsburgh. And I saw that this post had been created and that this fellow who sounded very interesting had accepted it. So I called him up. We were just beginning Landmarks work. And I thought I could learn about urban design maybe from him. And that's how he got here. And that's how we got started.
His legacy lives through the Remaking Cities Institute, which is an urban design research center that he started at CMU. How did he help remake Pittsburgh?
David and I told David we were working to try to stop urban renewal from devastating our neighborhoods. And he joined me in walking in Manchester and talking to the residents there and putting together a program to stop urban redevelopment of a demolition kind. And in doing so, I learned a lot, and I think he learned a lot, about going from the bottom up instead of the top down. He was not a planner who came in with set ideas and implanted them on the neighborhood. We listened, we learned, they learned from us. And so he had a great influence on Pittsburgh neighborhoods in general, because we went on to do many more. And he really helped establish our basic principles that we still have today.
You mentioned from the bottom up. Why was it hearing and taking seriously the community voices that was so important to him, and of course to you as well?
Well, top down, we found objectionable, because that means certain people who feel they know what's right for other people make their decisions and affect many, many people's lives. In terms of urban redevelopment back then, it affected thousands of lives, many African American, many businesses, many of those were African-American, disrupted families, and even changed the topography with highways. Right now, they're trying to cover up the damage they did disuniting the Hill District from downtown. So going and listening to the people who are affected by what might be done only seems sensible. But that's very hard to communicate to people who think they know the answers. Now, David, then he really institutionalized this in two ways. He did the Remaking Cities, and he did found Urban Design Associates, the architectural firm.
Right.
And with Don Carter, Ray Gindros, they were then students of his and became partners. And that organization did a great deal of this kind of planning for this area and for areas all over the country. And that firm, of course, continues. So he created, in effect, two institutions and greatly influenced a third one, which is Pittsburgh History and Landmarks Foundation.
You mentioned the Remaking Cities Institute. I believe that name actually came about as a result or part of a conference that he hosted three decades ago here in Pittsburgh. And Prince Charles was a keynote speaker because of his interest in post-industrial cities.
Exactly. He had the same kind of principles. And when he came here, he wanted to go to one or more of our historic, very challenged neighborhoods. He and David chose Homestead, and they went there. They met with the people there, and David did something else that I don't know many planners have done. He said, after you leave, I will move here. He lived in Shadyside. I will move here, and I will make a real commitment. He did. He bought a house with, I think, several acres of land, and he lived there, worked for the neighborhood on behalf of the neighborhood until he died. So he was faithful to that commitment that he made to Prince Charles to the very end of his life. He bought buildings there. He started businesses there with a friend or friends. And so that was an extraordinary, consistent commitment.
Arthur Ziegler is the president and co-founder of Pittsburgh History and Landmarks Foundation. Arthur, thanks so much for sharing your remembrances of David Lewis.
Thank you very much for asking.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at wesa.fm/confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Joe Yazenkovich, and Doug Shugerts. Until next time, I'm Kevin Gavin. Hope you have a good day of good news.